Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC alongside Steve Nichol. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. Stevie, great to be with you. Lots to get to in the show. Inter Milan, now your league leaders in Serie A. We'll discuss that in a little bit. Plus, Liverpool, Manchester City, discuss that as well. But let's start in the Bundesliga. Your league leaders, Bayern Munich, traveled to Hertha Berlin just before they head off to the FIFA Club World Cup and get a 1-0 win. Rare Robert Lewandowski penalty miss in this one. The goal coming in the 21st minute from Kingsley Coman. That the difference. Bayern Munich then picking up the 3 points. And what it means in the Bundesliga table is that Bayern are now 10 points clear of second place Leipzig. The big gap continues to grow as Bayern Munich chases yet another league title. And look at that, Leverkusen and Dortmund both right now outside of the Champions League spots. Well, Stevie, we expected Bayern to win that match, but it was nervous at the end.
Well, the longer the game went on, the more Hertha actually, you could see they believed that they could get something. You know, they probably could and should have been 3-0 down at halftime. This game could have been over, but it wasn't. Lewandowski obviously missing the penalty was huge. And as I said, the longer it went on, they started to get closer and closer, culminating with 2 minutes to go. Cunha all the way through, has to score, but just puts it wide and the game's over.
That's just it, Jan, isn't it? Bayern Munich get the 3 points, but not their clinical selves.
No, they don't. But it still just shows you the top teams, what they're doing. They do what is necessary. And even Lewandowski missing a penalty, that is breaking news against the Norwegian goalkeeper who just get a chance from the new manager, Dardai. Bruno Labbadia got fired. They lost against Frankfurt, not losing to Bayern Munich. But I think it's fair to believe. I saw something in this team. I think that Dardai, he was there for 4 or 5 years before he was fired in Berlin. I think he will kind of find a way to get him out of that relegation zone. Cunha, who missed the chance at the end there, is a player I rate. He came from RB Leipzig. He's a good lad there. They got 9 minutes out of Sami Khedira today. He will stabilise that midfield they have at the back with Stark, who was unlucky today that it was a deflection from the Koeman shot who went in. I think they have a good team. I don't expect Hertha Berlin to be in the relegation zone for the rest of the season. It must be said also a small excuse for Bayern. The first hour of this game, it was a lot of snow. It was hard to kind of get that flow into the game. But Bayern do what Bayern does best in Germany, and that is winning football games. And it's not a bad skill to have.
Yeah, you mentioned Bayern do what they do best. One thing they always do is this high line. We saw it time and time again in this match where Hertha Berlin got caught offside, but it's so risky. Why is it that Bayern can't play that high line and limit those chances? Why can't they combine the best of those worlds, Jan?
Because when Bayern do this, they win trophies. And going back to the Champions League tournament, we always said, well, they're going to meet PSG and they're quick. Mbappé, what will they do? This is their risky game. This is how they do it. They have a libero back there who is the best libero Bayern got since Franz Beckenbauer played libero for them. So this is the way they are playing. And there have been a lot of discussion who should play at the back. Pavard has been out of form. Should it be Boateng? Should it be Alaba? Should it be Hernandez? And people are saying that they are discussing Salihamidžić, the sport director, being a bit in fight with Flick, because there have been some discussions about that high line, who going to stand there. But as long as they're winning games, they lose something, but they win something because they can stand very high up, do the pressure up front. But as we saw today, the opposition will always get that one chance, and that chance you have to take.
Jan will have a chance to win another little something coming up in the next week as they travel to Qatar for the FIFA Club World Cup. There you see they'll slot into the semifinals, Bayern Munich against the Egyptian champions Al Ahly. If they do reach the final, it would be next week. So, more matches for this Bayern Munich team in a schedule that we know is already very congested, Stevie. It's interesting. At the beginning of the season, there were some concerns about, like, Bayern's depth. They didn't really do much in the winter transfer window. You've been through one of these before. Can it disrupt the team in the middle of a season, as successful as Bayern so far?
I think normally you can get away with it. I think, to be honest, because of the amount of games that are being played, if you're going to add a couple more, albeit games that they probably should win, certainly Al Ahly in the first game should be a walkover. But then you add the travelling onto that as well. You've got the Champions League coming up. So there's no question it could be a distraction. But at the end of the day, it will come down to, in my opinion, one thing. Injuries. Mm. If they don't pick any injuries up, then I think they'll just continue to do what they've been doing. But they could turn around and do what's going on at Liverpool right now with injuries, and that certainly would be a disruption.
Jan, how important is this in Germany?
Well, it's important in way of the old Liverpool team that Stevie was a part of. To win trophies is very important for them, and they're very proud of the trophies. And Doha is a special place for Bayern Munich. This is the same place they always go for their training camp before the season. They know the area. So for them to go there and win a trophy will make them good. And I think that was the good thing about tonight. They now have a 10-point lead. I mean, Leipzig can reduce that tomorrow, of course. But they go there, they play one against, well, shouldn't be underestimated Egyptian champions. I think that's the team who won most championship in the whole world. But this should be a way for them to get to the final. And then in 10 days, they play in Bielefeld. So I think that Flick will have a chance now to kind of mix it a bit around. And the problem is with Bayern, as it is with these kind of players, these players want to play all games. Mm. They don't like to sit on the bench. They don't like to be rested. These players want to play. And you can't turn it around. It's a good way to get out of Germany, get some sun on your body, play some good football and bring home a trophy. And that is always good for a German champion.
Jan, how does it work in Germany? Will all fans of the Bundesliga be rooting for Bayern Munich or will they all be rooting against Bayern Munich?
Well, an interesting question, because I think Bayern Munich, for the common fans in Germany, is always the second best team. That they got a lot of fans all around Germany. So I would think that will people be sort of love-hate thing. I think they're more worried about other things now in the society in Germany, to have a too much look to Doha and how Bayern will be doing there. But the proudness of German champions are, of course, there. But I don't think they will admit it, though.
Let's turn our attention to the weekend. The team's chasing Bayern Munich, Dortmund hosting Freiburg. Dortmund six right now, but this feels like a really important game. With a win, they could go as high as third. With a loss, they could drop as low as eighth, Jan.
Well, it's an interesting thing now in these rounds. We think this is the end of the season, but there are 14 games left or something. But still, you can't be too far behind. And the Bundesliga, you have the Bayern is number one, and then you have five, six teams now who's fighting out for the Champions League. And just see, there are three teams on 32 points and Frankfurt on 33, maybe the outsider in that race. But the thing about Dortmund, they can't slip up more, because there will be a lot of talking about their big sign or the big players, the big talented player. They will be wanted. It's a Sancho or a Haaland. Thank God for them that they won the last round. I mean, that made them good. But they can't slip out now. And the problem as well, that when you take a young rookie as a coach, you just feel when plan A is struggling, he doesn't come up with B or C. So they are so need of these players to be informed. The good news for Dortmund is that Jadon Sancho is coming into form now. In the beginning of the season, he was hopeless. But now he's back to his best, scoring goals and making assists. And that is very good news for them.
Leipzig visit Schalke on Saturday as well. But probably for Leipzig, the bigger concern right now is the new rules coming in from the German government as far as travel restrictions are concerned due to the coronavirus pandemic. It will make for Liverpool's trip to Leipzig in the Champions League knockout rounds impossible to do. So what's the plan now, to move it outside of Germany?
Well, the last news from Germany is that Mitzlaff, the CEO or the boss of Leipzig, the game will go ahead, and it got to. If not, they will lose the game 3-0. The most likely thing would be to take them to their sister or brother club in Salzburg, but the Austrian got even more restrictions than the Germans. So they've been talking about Holland, the same thing there. It could be that they'll take the game to London and play the game in London. There's even been talk about having two games at Liverpool, but I'm not sure that RB Leipzig want to do that. The interesting thing with Germany is that the Bundesländer, the regions, decide on health issues. So Leipzig is a part of Sachsen. So this is Sachsen saying, no, no entry for Liverpool here. And of course, they are working very hard to find a solution, but there will be a football game and we'll just see where they take them. Will they take them to Budapest? Maybe London, but the game will go ahead.
Both games at Anfield. That works out for you, yeah?
You think so? Have you seen Liverpool at Anfield recently?
True. That was a comment from a month ago.
They've lost to Burnley and they've lost to Brighton, so I don't think Leipzig should be too scared right now.
You think this could have an effect on the tie? I mean, it plays to Liverpool's advantage. I mean, Leipzig wouldn't be at home.
I'm not so sure. Listen, it's only, 10 days before the play? And right now, Liverpool are struggling big time. And so right now, Leipzig should be quite happy to play against Liverpool anywhere on the planet. Because with the injuries, with the form, the things that we haven't seen for two or three seasons are going on at Liverpool. So listen, regardless of where the game is, Leipzig right now, absolutely, are favourites, regardless of where the games are.
All right, we'll leave it there. Plenty more discussion over on Extra Time. Stevie's back. So is Jan. Craig will join us as well, taking your questions off Twitter.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Top of the Premier League is where Manchester City and Liverpool have been for most of the last three seasons. Two sides will meet Sunday at Anfield. Currently, three places and 7 points the difference between the two. Advantage to Manchester City, who also have a game in hand. Apparently not the only advantage for Manchester City. Here's what Jurgen Klopp has had to say. Quote, "We haven't had a break. I think Manchester City had a two-week break for COVID reasons. It's really tough. It's a tough season for many teams." This, of course, drawing a response from his counterpart, Pep Guardiola. Quote, "I'll tell him tomorrow. He knows it's not true. Come on. Nobody in the Premier League has had 2 weeks off. I'm surprised. I thought Jurgen was not that type of manager like the other ones who are usually doing it. I didn't expect that comment." Craig and Stewart with us here on ESPN FC. Craig, I'll start with you. The war of words has begun. No surprise, Jurgen Klopp started it.
Well, I think Klopp's in his own head, never mind trying to get into other managers' heads. But, I mean, I'm not quite sure where these 2 weeks came about. Can anybody shed some light on this for me?
Well, it did. Debbie. That's why.
Yeah, I don't think it did. And in fact, if it did, if there was a break, it was because Manchester City had COVID-19 cases, which is definitely not what Jurgen Klopp wants for his team.
I broke with tradition on this show earlier today and I did a bit of prep. In between watching the European Tour and the PGA Tour in Scottsdale, I had a little look back. And listen, City did have a break. Both teams had a break in November, by the way, from the 8th of November, Liverpool to the 21st, or City to the 21st, Liverpool to the 22nd, so Liverpool had an extra day. Over Christmas, City did have a break between the 26th of December and the 3rd of January, so around 8 days. But then Liverpool had this break. Now, bear this in mind. 4th of January, they lost at Southampton. They didn't play in the Premier League again until the 17th of January in that awful game against Man United. That's 13 days. Now, there was a game in between that, right, which was on January the 8th, which was an FA Cup game. So you could say from the 8th to the 17th, they had 9 days rest. But that FA Cup game for Liverpool, wait for it, was against Aston Villa's under-23s, right? So it's basically a training game, which they won 4-1. And I look back on that, they had 83% possession and almost 30 pops on goal. Andy was able to rest Alisson, Firmino, Robertson, Alexander-Arnold and Thiago. So he basically had If you discount that game as a training game against the kids, as it was, Klopp basically had from the 4th of January to the 17th of January before he faced elite-level opponents. So, he's in his own head, put it that way.
All to say, Stevie, I mean, there's no real grounds to this complaint from Klopp.
No, and it's... You know, the last two or three seasons, it's been how great is this guy? How positive is this guy?
So what happened?
What a guy. Now, all of a sudden, and it's a true saying, you always find out the character of somebody when things are going wrong. And unfortunately, right now, he's failing. Because all he's done is complain. Now, it's not exactly a theatrical complaint, but it's just something that he's obviously been thinking about.
Yeah.
And he's thrown it in. I mean... Listen, why do you want to, regardless of whether it's Man City or anybody else, why do you want to go and upset your next opponent anyway?
And so give your own team an excuse.
Well, I'm sorry. Listen, if you want to use stuff like this to have the bunker down mentality within your own team and your own club, then that's fine. But you don't do it in the press. I mean, that just smacks of sour grapes.
Robbo, what's his aim here? What's his play here? Because to me, it seems like he's setting the table for a defeat.
Well, as we've spoken about many, many times, he's completely, in my view, lost the plot in terms of how to deal with the press, how to deal with the pressure. He's making every excuse he can possibly give at the moment. And I saw it many, many years ago, and I'm going to mention his name again, Arsene Wenger, in a similar sort of situation when they had four or five defeats, and he then went into the press and said, we're the most fouled team in the Premier League. And the press said to him, actually, you're not. You're the eighth most fouled team in the Premier League. He kept on saying, no, we're the most fouled team. And if you're going to say things in the press, you've got to get your facts right. And if he doesn't get his facts right, he's going to come into for criticism, Klopp. And he hasn't got his facts right, as Craig quite rightly said. And Craig should be a lawyer, shouldn't he, after that little demonstration?
Craig, 10-point gap if Liverpool were to lose. Does this make it a must-win?
Yes, I think so. You know, City could take a draw. It's not ideal for them, but they could take a draw. But with the game in hand they've got, then I think Liverpool need to get some momentum going. Look, you said what's his aim in this rhetoric. I don't think he has a name. I don't think he's playing a game. I think he believes it. I think he's believed it from pretty much the start of the season when the Van Dijk injury came along, which was dreadfully handled by the officials. We accept that. And it sort of steamrolled from there with all the problems that they've had. But then he's brought on himself this belief in his own mind, and he's perpetrated it to his players that the broadcasters were against him, that the league were hedging against him. Now it's the teams with COVID and the problems they've had with COVID. And listen, City have had self-inflicted COVID issues. There's no doubt about that. It's been well documented. But they've also had issues, COVID issues like others, that have come about through no fault of their own. And one of those players is Sergio Aguero, who's been out most of the season. So I think in his own mind, Klopp believes what he's saying. Maybe some of it is tongue-in-cheek, but I think the majority, he actually thinks everyone's been against him this year. Certainly, they haven't had a great deal of luck in terms of it, the injuries. There's no doubt about that. And as I said a couple of days ago on the show, there's no disgrace in not playing well when you're having to play so many players out of position. And I'm talking about the midfielders going back and playing in centre-half. There's no shame in not being in the title race this year if they lose or if they're in poor form like they have been. Because their injuries, the one thing that he can back up is to say, we've had a really bad season with injuries. That they have done. But the rest of it, Sebi, is just an utter nonsense. And listen, he's pretty much got, he doesn't need to do this. He's got pretty much a free pass with what he's delivered for that club over the last couple of years. He doesn't need to go down this road that's making him look a little bit like a crybaby in the circumstances.
Craig mentions the injuries. Let's talk center half. Is this the weekend for Kabak, for Davis? Is this is why you brought him in, right?
Well, you sign players to, you know, because you're injured, you need bodies.
Right.
Listen, Ben Davis, as good as he may be in the Championship, is not ready to step into the Premier League after a couple of days and play against Manchester City. And I would suggest that Kabak isn't either. Schalke are last in the Bundesliga. Defensively, they're horrendous.
Well, why'd they bring these guys in then?
Because they need bodies. You've got two central midfielders playing centre-back. You have to do something. You have to get bodies in. Because right now, because the two centre midfielders are playing centre-back, it's killing you going forward. Mm. So you have to make a decision. You either keep the two centre-backs where they are, the centre midfielders, and you don't sign anybody, or you take a gamble. And that's what they've done. They've taken a gamble. I would suggest, however, you don't play them after 2 days of training when they don't probably even know the players' names. Mm.
Alisson a doubt, Fabinho a doubt, Mane a doubt. So Liverpool issues maybe stacking up there. Robbo, how do you see this one playing out?
Well, I would go against Stevie. I'd say he has to play one of them at least to try and get one or two of those midfield players back into that central area. Because whenever Liverpool have beaten Manchester City, and they've got away with some dubious tackles as well, particularly at Anfield, it's been when the crowd have been baying for blood. Obviously, that's not going to happen. And Liverpool's midfield have been tight. They've got tackles in. They've won back possession high up the field. They've run all over the park. In the midfield they've got at the moment, without Henderson in there, they can't do that. So I see Manchester City dominating possession, running the game and winning the game quite comfortably. But if he can put one or two of those midfield players back in there and make it a real battle and a real fight, they've got half a chance.
Craig, who are you taking on Sunday?
I'm with Robbo here in a sense that I don't know that it will happen. But if Fabinho's fit and he goes back in there, its likelihood is it would be the young boy Davies from Preston North End, the left footer. But you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't here, because, you know, you put somebody who has championship experience in only, certainly recently, and you put them in against this City side. I mean, this City side have been, you know, pulling teams up. They haven't been scoring the goals, as Stevie pointed out in the show a couple of days ago, but they've still been pulling sides from pillar to post. And that it is a big call to try and stiffen up your midfield to potentially put one of those players in. And that's going to come down to the management. But listen, I think the way it's gone at the moment, if City continue to play and defend the way they have been, I could see them just picking up another victory. I think it'll end Liverpool's quest to even have a sniff at the title, and their fight will be for the top four. That's where their form would suggest it is. And I think it would continue City on as the favourites for this Premier League title, unless Liverpool can come up with something that ruffles the defence of the feathers of this defence that have been excellent. 13 games unbeaten, umpteen clean sheets, they've been rock solid.
So let me tell you something. I played in the Championship and then went and played back in the Premier League. And I was flabbergasted at the difference in pace.
Yep.
And if Craig's right and Ben Davies goes in there, his head's going to be spinning.
Hmm.
You know, it's one thing to play when you can see everything and you can read things. But when that pace is ratcheted up, you don't see things clearly and you don't read things as quickly. That's a problem.
All right, we'll have to... Who's winning?
Oh,
he had to get it in there. That was Manchester City, for those that didn't understand the accent there. Here's a look at your Premier League schedule for the coming weekend. Action starts early Saturday, Aston Villa hosting Arsenal, and wraps up with a one match on Monday, Leeds United at home against Crystal Palace.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Inter Milan, and as we mentioned, they now go ahead of their city rivals, AC Milan, by a point. Milan, of course, will face Crotone later this weekend, so a chance for them to get right back top of the table. Stuart Robson, Ale Moreno with us. Robbo, what did you make of Inter's performance today?
I thought for the first 60 minutes, it wasn't particularly impressive. It was underwhelming almost. They got that goal through Barella, but there wasn't the link-up play. They weren't really getting it from back to front with any sort of quality. They were playing at a slow tempo. They didn't defend particularly well the last 10, 15 minutes of the first half. So I was disappointed. And I'm seeing them getting further away from their game plan than I've seen them at any stage during the season, over the last couple of seasons. But once they got the second goal, then they started to show their quality. We saw Hakimi break down the right-hand side with pace. Martinez came on to try and partner with Lukaku, and they started to perform that little bit better than Lukaku did with Sanchez. The midfield players started to get on the ball and make things happen. But for most of the game, I wouldn't say it was a great performance. It'd be a worrying performance if I was Antonio Conte.
Ale, it doesn't sound like Rabo's quite convinced with Inter today. Were you?
No, but I haven't been convinced by Inter all season long, and yet they're first in Serie A. And so you watch this team play, and it doesn't really jump out at you. It really doesn't kind of highlight some of the things that they can do well. A lot of the times, it's a team that is very, very content with just defending deep in their own half, and then they regain possession, they go on a counter, score off a counter, and then, okay, that's fine, no problem, this is how we're going to play the game. You may have thought after they scored the first goal that this was the moment in which they were really going to get after Fiorentina. Instead, they allow Fiorentina, a team that struggles to score goals, to have open opportunities and to create a couple of chances, and Handanovic has to come up with a save. Fiorentina, and I had to look it up because they didn't look like they were going to score any time today, they are 30 goals behind Inter in terms of goals scored this year. Only Parma has scored fewer goals than Fiorentina in Serie A this year. And yet, as Stewie just pointed out, towards the end of the first half, Fiorentina was dangerous. But it was not because of Fiorentina's doing. It was more because Inter had taken a step back. And then you saw Inter in the second half kind of a little bit take a step forward. They were good enough in the second goal, and then from then on there was no chance Fiorentina was getting back into this, and Inter just knocked the ball around the field.
And Robbo, they may be, you know, first place in the table right now, but that's exactly the concern with Inter, isn't it? When we talk about the potential of them winning the league, most of the damage that they've seen this year so far has been self-inflicted.
Yeah, and what they try and do, once, as Ali just said, once they start playing their attacking football, they look dangerous. They've scored more, as many goals as anybody in Serie A at the moment. They look as though they can be threatening. But as soon as they get themselves in front, they then go back into trying to play out from the back. I know they're trying to suck the opposition on so they can get it into the front place. But they make bad decisions at times at the back. They play it too slow. It goes into Brozovic. He goes back to Bastoni. Bastoni goes back to Handanovic. And it encourages the opposition to get that little bit higher up the field. And they get caught in little tight areas. And that's when they look a poor side. If they carried on, get it into the front two, and if they can't get it into the front two, keep switching it out to the wing backs, and the wing backs doing things at pace and getting crosses into the box, they're an excellent side. But they go away from that, and whether that's the manager or the players themselves, they go back to playing at a slow tempo, and that's when they cause themselves problems. They did it against Juventus in midweek in the Coppa Italia. They started to do it in the first half of this game against Fiorentina. That's a major worry for them.
You know, you think of Conte's teams, do any of them ever have a particular style? You know, Juventus were underwhelming at times, I thought Chelsea were underwhelming when he was there. And Inter Milan had underwhelming as well. I mean, this is Conte's teams. Mm. They might underwhelm you, but you know what? They end up winning. Certainly domestically they do. And that's why they'll probably end up winning this as well.
All right. Well, if they don't win it, could be Juventus or Roma that have a word in that. Those two teams will meet on Saturday. But before we talk about Juve and Roma, Stevie, special birthday for Cristiano Ronaldo. He turns 36 today. And you know what? It feels like every few months there's a conversation like, is he out of his peak yet? And then he gives us a great performance. And we saw that great performance with the brace that he hits midweek in the cup against Inter.
Well, this is all about using your football brain. He knows the keeper's made a mistake coming out. He knows the defender is struggling to make a decision. He's working this all out as he's chasing down. And then, of course, he gets the benefit of it. Defender's not quite sure where he is. And then he has the composure when he gets the opportunity to put it in the back of the net. He's playing with his brain. Mm. And at 36, that's what you have to do, because your legs are nowhere close to your opposition, who may be 26. Hmm. So you got to use what's going on between your ears. And there's nothing wrong between his ears, let me tell you.
15 goals so far this season in the league. That's number one in all of Italy. Ale, no signs of slowing down despite the advanced age, I realize as I say that, and I'm 37.
A couple of things about Cristiano Ronaldo that I think are very impressive. One is the continuous drive, the ability and willingness to push himself. Because if there was ever a guy that could just say, you know what, I've done everything there is to be done. What else do I have to prove? I don't have to prove anybody or anything to anybody else. And yet he continues to show up day in and day out, trying to make himself better and push himself to the limit and push himself to being a productive player for Juventus. That's one thing. And then it's one thing to have the drive, but there's another part to this, and it's the self-evaluation. His ability to look at himself in the mirror and say, you know what, yeah, I'm not that guy that is going to take players on the left-hand side, is going to cut inside and score the goals the way that I once did. Now I have to reinvent my game. Now I have to think of myself in a different way. But how can I still be productive? How can I still be impactful? And we have seen him taking more of a central position role, more of a guy inside the 18-yard box, and be devastating that way. So there's a point here. One is his personal drive to be better and continue to push himself, and then his ability to really evaluate his game and know what's best for him and for the team. And now he has put those things together and continues to score goals for Juventus.
Bravo, the rest of us just watch the highlights. You watch a ton of Serie A. How much longer can we expect Ronaldo to stay at his peak?
I still think he'll be at his peak for maybe another couple of years. But going back to Ali's point, what he does now, and he does it cleverly, I can tell after about 10 minutes what sort of game he's going to play. If he feels as though he's not going to be able to run in behind because he doesn't feel quite right, he'll go and drift out to the left wing. He'll start picking balls up that little bit deeper, and he'll encourage other people to run beyond him. When he's feeling fit and enthusiastic and he wants to make runs, he feels good, he'll make runs in behind and he'll join Morata, and they look like a really good strike force. And there'll be other days where he doesn't really want to get involved in the game, and he knows that crosses are going to come in the box, and he's going to be a centre forward who's going to win balls in the air. And that's when I think he looks at his most dangerous, when crosses are coming into the box and he's threatening in the air because he's got great spring, a great leap, and he's evaluating what sort of game it's going to be after about 10 minutes because he knows his own fitness.
Robbo, Ronaldo and Juventus hosting Roma this weekend. Juve coming in fourth, Roma third. Who do you think needs it more?
Juventus need it more. Roma, I've seen Roma play three times against the big sides. Lazio, Atalanta, Napoli, and they were absolutely hopeless. They lost 4-1, 3-0 and 4-0. I can't see them doing particularly well against Juventus. Juventus played really well in the first half against Sampdoria, and I thought that's the Juventus that could win the Serie A. And I saw them play really well in the Coppa Italia in the first half, defensively, pressing from the front, stopping into playing, but they couldn't get it right in the second half. And that's what Pirlo's got to manage to do. He's got to get it right in both halves. He's got to get his tactics absolutely right. He's got to get the best out of the players. And if they can do that throughout the game, they'll have too much for Roma, I think.
Right then, Robbo, give us a prediction. Scoreline.
I'm going to go with Juventus 2, Roma 0.
All right. Here's a look at the Serie A schedule that includes that Juventus-Roma match on Saturday. All those matches available for you on ESPN+. And a reminder, plenty more Serie A talk on the Serie Awesome podcast. Matteo, Kay, Nikki, and Mina lead the charge, keeping you up to date all things Italian football.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Changing gears a little bit, the intersection of race and football has been at the foreground of most of our minds for the last year. And here at ESPN FC, that's led to a series called The Conversation, hosted by Arshaka Hislop and Alexis Nunez. Here's a brief clip from a recent sit-down with Anton Ferdinand.
We compare to the NBA and NFL. We compare especially to the NBA, where you've got the likes of LeBron and that, who will boycott a game and will not go on the pitch because something's happened. For me, it shouldn't even get to that level. The onus shouldn't be on the players to walk off the pitch. It should be taken out of their hands. You know, so if I'm on the FA, I'm looking at it and I'm going, okay, the game against England and Bulgaria, my England manager and my England the England players that are representing me and my association, they're saying if there's any racial abuse, we're going to walk off. That's what they're saying all week. And then I'm now sitting in the ground and I'm hearing this racial abuse. Why ain't I going downstairs and saying to Gareth and the players, get off the pitch? Us as a union will take this one on the chin, not you as players. We're going to take control of it. Because that, for me, that's a powerful statement. If players do it, the first thing that gets said is, why are you walking off the pitch for? You're on 150 a week. You're on 200 grand a week. What do you care? We've paid our hard-earned money to come watch you and you just walked off the pitch. That's what's going to be said. Not every fan, but there'll be a section of the fan base that will say that, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas if an organisation says it, they're not talking against an organisation, not a group of individuals. There's a difference.
Great work from Shaka and Alexis. Episodes of The Conversation will drop every Friday, and they are available in podcast form right there on our website. All right, then. Well, that's all we've got for today's edition of ESPN FC. We talked about Cristiano Ronaldo's birthday. We should also note it's Neymar's birthday. Can you believe he's 29?
Forget that. What do you get them?
What do you get the man who has everything?
You're going to get either of them something. What do you get them?
You know what you get them? You get them a spot on Extra Time. Coming up next, it's me and Stevie, Jan and Craig taking your questions. Enjoy. Ah, greetings and welcome into this Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. A little something different for you there, Stevie. So much peer pressure from you over the months and years. I had to change it up. We got Craig and Jan with us as well. Look at that fine-looking duo. Questions. First one, if Spurs don't make top four, do Kane and or Son push for a move? If so, where could they go? Let's tackle the first half of that first, Stevie. Do you think if they don't finish top four, those two should leave? Well, we talk about it a lot on this show.
I think Harry Kane should. Yeah. I mean, Harry Kane, we got a game in any team on the planet, pretty much. So does he want to stay at Spurs and be one of those recognised as, this is my only team? Or does he want to get some silverware? Listen, we'll play because we want to win things. So absolutely, Kane should be looking to get going.
Jan, what do you think?
I agree with Stevie. I think there is not many typical number nines. I think Harry Kane has developed into a great number nine. Good reading of the game. As for Son, the partnership they made up at Tottenham is unbelievable. But when we see Tottenham at the moment, this is more or less the place strikers go to die at the moment, because you have to attack to get chances. You have to attack to get goals, and I feel sorry for them at the moment because not much going forward. Harry Kane, I would take to any club. I agree, you need that big number nine, and he is that plus some extra stuff.
Craig, if you're Kane or Son, is it more important to you whether you finish top four and you get Champions League, or whether Jose Mourinho leaves?
I think the latter. But because, you know, although Harry Kane's been, up until his injury, has been instrumental in the way they've played, it's not ideal, is it? And let's be honest, they were ranked rotten again yesterday. They were rotten against Brighton in the last outing. Things have started to turn south. And he needs to get out of there now, because he's coming into his late 20s. He's going to have to make that move. And there's going to be and he's gone down the pecking order, because there's going to be a right bun fight for Erling Haaland, right? And if I was any club out there, that would be my first port of call. Not just for talent, but for longevity because of his age. And so Harry Kane has to be mindful that there are others out there now who other clubs are going to be interested in. So it's pretty much, I think, now or never for him. Hmm.
Manchester City with either Haaland or Kane leading that attack. Yikes. Why is it so important when discussing Spurs to mention that they used to play a certain attacking style. Why does Mourinho get extra stick? Because he sets out his team in a different style than how they played a decade ago.
What do you mean, boring?
Yeah, I think that's what we're trying to say there.
There's your answer. Do you want to watch a team that tries to go forward, tries to create, gives you something to get off your seat about, and cheer you up with some chances and some goals? Or do you want to win 1-0 and be stuck at the edge of your own box, watching your defenders blocking shots and making last-ditch tackles?
Yeah.
I don't know which one I would prefer.
It's not just like how they play, right? It's how they play given the talent they have. That has to be the frustrating
part. You're basically doubling up. You're correct. You're doubling up. It's one thing to be Sam Allardyce and go to West Brom and try and scrap and fight your way out and defend and hopefully do teams on the break. But when you've got people like Harry Kane and Heung-Min Song and you don't get the ball to them, I mean, that's criminal.
Next question, Chelsea focus. Why has Marcos Alonso been starting over Ben Chilwell in Chelsea's last few matches? How crazy is it that Alonso, who hadn't been in a Premier League squad since September, is now starting over a big money signing? Craig, it has been one of the more noticeable changes of the Tuchel era.
Yeah, and I think one part of it is down to the system change. Alonso has been successful at Chelsea as a wing-back. Azpilicueta has had his best season as a right-sided centre-back. So that probably came as a bigger surprise to Ben Chilwell than it did to many of us. But he's nailed his colours to the mast at the moment. I think, you know, Chilwell's got the athleticism to play a wing-back as well and get up and down. But I think maybe he's looking at Alonso in the final third with a little bit more composure and a little less defensive issues that he has to deal with because of the system they're playing in. That can be the only reason that somebody comes in out of the wilderness like Marcus Alonso has.
Jan, the next question is for all three of you, but I'll start with you. Can you describe the mentality aspect of playing that's necessary to make a great comeback? I wonder, what's the greatest comeback you've been a part of?
Well, have I been ever to Benny Comba? I think I've just lost so many games. I've had some comebacks, but I think that the main thing is that we have been talking about the culture and mentality at the club. We have talked about Bayern Munich always coming back. Is that belief that you can come back when you are a weaker team? If you go 1 or 2 nil down, you more or less give up. And I think that's why you will see the great comebacks is also great teams that do that, because it's all a confidence matter. And sometimes, and I say that often when we discuss football, is that we sometimes forget that these players, they are not robots. These are players, human beings that need their confidence. And you can see that in games. You can see which teams are going down when they are struggling. As we were talking about Tottenham, you see when they get 1-0 down, they think, well, we don't have another plan. Our plan was to have 0-0 or maybe grab one. And so I think that is the mentality for comebacks. And as I played for some weaker teams, I can't come up with any. Stevie would probably have made some fantastic comebacks, right?
Yeah, Stevie, we were talking about this before. You couldn't actually think of any. You found one from the other side, though.
Yeah, we were 4-0 up against Leeds United at Elland Road. Back, what, 87, something like that?
You remember it better than I do.
Aye. Oh, I remember it, because I remember the crowd was going absolutely bananas when they actually started. We went out at half-time, 4-0 up, and everybody in general kind of just took it down a level, which was a big mistake. Which, of course, the coaches before we left the dressing room said, start the way we finished and don't drop a level, but we did. Anyway, we get out and the crowd are singing, always look on the bright side of life. Because they were 4-0 down, we were annihilating the team and they were just going to enjoy themselves. But then after about 10 minutes of the second half, they scored one, and then they scored another straight after, and then another, and all of a sudden it was 4-3. And the place was going bananas. Mm. And they just kept singing a song the whole way through, interspersed with cheers for the goals going in. But fortunately, we got a goal, went 5-3 up. They got one to make it 5-4 with, like, 7 minutes to go. I'll tell you, that was a hairy 7 minutes. Mm. But, wow, what an atmosphere.
Craig, any great comebacks you can recall?
Not many, but the one that I can recall was with Jim Smith at Derby in the relegation season. I think it was March or April, so down to the business end of the season. And we went to Bradford City, managed by Paul Jewell. and we went 2-0 up in the first half, and then Dean Windaff started banging them in from everywhere, and Rory Delap got himself sent off for something pretty soft. So we're down to 10 men. We went behind from 2-0 to 3-2. I can't remember exactly, but we might have went 4-2 down, a man down, and we came back, and I think the end was we managed to get a 4-4 out of it and get a point out of it. So yeah, that was one that I can remember, particularly because Rory was sent off after I think like 25 or 30 minutes.
I got one, Seb, from the weak side of life. When we were up with Premier League with Swindon, we loved to attack. We were a bit naive. We're losing 7-1 at Newcastle, losing 5 to Liverpool, 5 to Southampton. Then we played Everton in January. This is into the Premier League season. We were 2-0 down, and we came back to 2-2 Swindon Town at Goodison Park, and we felt so good. 20 minutes to go, kept attacking, lost 6-2. Oof. So I think that is just sums up my comeback history in English football.
So those who have been paying attention to the show for the last few days know that there was a pretty big promise made. I don't know if it was on this desk, one of the other studios. Craig was going to grow out his beard for months, apparently.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Craig, if you do in fact
that's
grow out your beard,
no,
why not? Look, he's doing it now. It's coming.
You have a laugh.
Craig, here's the question. If you do in fact grow out your beard, which you are obviously continuing, do you think you can achieve Nuno's length and shape of facial hair? The Wolves manager.
What's the shape? Yeah. I don't pay attention to that.
Just a big, bushy beard.
There's no way Cher was going to go near him if he grows a big, dark beard.
Really? Beards
I'm
are very much
you.
The style now, Stevie.
I've got news for you. I've got news for you. She doesn't come near me anyway.
Well, I understand that, but I...
Don't worry about that. That's not a problem.
But what's the story, Craig, with that beard? Because I missed out on that. Will you keep it till you get right Manchester United?
He must have. He's got a rash. I bet he's got a rash or something.
Until Ollie wins the Premier League.
Yeah, will Ollie win the Premier League?
Yeah, I'm growing in anticipation of having to go in disguise, Jan. if Solskjaer pulls it off, so...
I will always find you.
Oh, man.
Coming down here. Lassies, false nose.
Both of them have a little bit of beard going. You and me, though?
Clean.
Yeah.
Clean cut.
Modern look. It's more modern look.
No, stylish, isn't it?
Yeah. What would you know about style?
Absolutely nothing.
All right, we'll leave the style talk there. Plenty more extra time for you. Tomorrow, Dan Thomas is back in the driver's chair. Don't miss tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. So much good football this weekend.